podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Everyone thinks I had a storybook career, that I just sprang into Disney Channel stardom overnight, made millions, and lived happily ever after. Spoiler alert, I didn't. There were countless failures along the way, and there still are. How I deal with that struggle and how I pivot when failure creeps in is what allows me to keep going, keep learning, and keep striving for balance. The Vulnerable Podcast is an invitation to hang out every week with me, Christy Carlson Romano, as I invite friends, celebrities, and experts for in-depth conversations discussing the good, the complicated, the beauty of being human, and what it means to be vulnerable. Join me every Tuesday as we navigate the ups and downs of my guests' paths to success.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Thanks for downloading this week's episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. For the first time in a very long time, we're able to preview some rugby, and that's exactly what we're going to do. We've got Scarlets versus Cardiff Blues and Ospreys versus Dragons coming up next week. Although it's slightly weird having these Welsh derbies in August, it's a good opportunity to look at some of the players who've been signed, some of the coaching teams, and it's just generally good to have Welsh rugby back. And joining me to preview those is Stephen Thomas, the Welsh rugby journalist. So yeah, we got stuck into loads of different things ranging from recruitment, strengths and weaknesses, the players we're looking forward to seeing, and of course some of the off the field stuff as well, ranging from politics to the future of the regions and all of these kind of things. So yeah, another interesting chat as it always is with Steph, so hopefully you will thoroughly enjoy this episode. I know I certainly enjoyed recording it. And a big thanks as always to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. Mentioned on last week's show that there's now an instant range, so you can make that So Coffee if you're in a hurry, as I was this week, busy trying to redecorate our house to move back into it, and managed to grab a cup of that before jumping out the door for a day's worth of painting, and it certainly helped get me a bit more sprightly. So if you want to do the same, you can go over to socoffeetrades.co.uk. Thanks for listening.
Mitchell gets back to make the tackle. Wales still in possession. Created by Shane Williams in midfield. Must be Lee Byrne. Williams. Shane Williams started it and finishes it.
Welcome to another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. And guess what? We've got some rugby to preview for you. And it's been 5 months since we've been able to say that. And joining me to do that, I'm delighted to say, welcoming you back to the Attacking Scrum podcast. It is Stefan Thomas. How are you, Steph?
I'm very well, thank you, Jed. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good to be, talking about upcoming rugby again, because it's been such a long time. How are you feeling about these upcoming fixtures? Are they getting you excited, or is it kind of just better to be having some rugby than none?
To be honest, Jed, I'm not overly excited because if you look at from a Welsh regional point of view, the games, it's got a pre-season feel about it. I know that the Scarlets are mathematically still in contention for the playoffs, but it's not going to happen really, is it? So obviously it's a very big positive step forward that we're able to have rugby in Wales at professional level, but you know, there's not really that much to play for, is there? So it's a bit of a damp squib, in my opinion.
It is, but I suppose you've got the thing that I think excites me a bit more, and it would certainly be the case if there was crowds in the stadium, but it is at least that we've got some Welsh derbies to look forward to, rather than it being, you know, Scarlet Zebra and Cardiff Treviso, and you know, those less glamorous ties that you have within there, because I guess from a playing perspective, like you say, it's gauging whether it will feel like pre-season for them, or you'll actually get out on the pitch and you know, as a paid professional, you're going to want to get out there and lay down a few markers.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, as we saw Friday night, you know, the Sale Harlequins game, the first 20 minutes was error. You know, there was errors throughout. It did have a little bit of a pre-season feel about it, despite the fact it was a, you know, a very important game for both sides. And it'll be the same in the Welsh derbies when it, you know, it'll be a lot of mistakes. I think the intent will be there, but ultimately, you know, when you haven't played that much rugby for, well, any rugby since March, you're going to be, you know, quite rusty. So, I think it'll be quite, you know, quite messy to begin with, but hopefully they can get back into their stride quite soon.
Well, we're going to be previewing both games in the course of this podcast. We're going to start by looking at the first of those fixtures, which is Scarlets at home to the Cardiff Blues, which takes place next Saturday. And rather than just looking at the fixture, because it's been so long and there's been player recruitment and everything else going on alongside this, we're going to have a team-by-team breakdown as well. So we may as well start, Steph, seeing as you're on and it's your side. We'll start with the Scarlets and with them being the home team. Announced last week, 16, 17 re-signings of players. Some pretty shrewd business over the the summer, or at least over the lockdown period. You must be pretty pleased with the way that recruitment's gone.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you consider the financial difficulties that the, you know, every rugby club in the world, I suppose, is facing at the moment. I mean, the Scarlets have easily, I think, the strongest squad of all four regions. I think all four starting lineups aren't, there's not that much difference, but the Scarlets are a lot stronger than the other three, as I think the depth they've got in this squad. You know, when you heard that, you know, that there'd be no rugby in March, and that obviously we're going to be playing behind closed doors for a long time, you did fear that there'd be a fire sale of players, because the Scarlets budget is, you know, it's in the £8 million ballpark, which is a lot. They've invested quite heavily in their squad. So, you know, they've done very well to retain the majority of their squad. I think they've recruited really well. Personally, the best signing, in my opinion, is controversial, but I think Sione Calamifoni. I think he's been consistently one of the best number eights in the Gallagher Premiership for a good few seasons at Gloucester and then at Leicester. It's a bit of a worry because obviously he missed the end of last season with concussion, but he's a very powerful carrier, really high work, great destructive tackler. And he's the sort of player that the Scarlets have missed, that when they've lost those tight games in Europe, it's because they haven't had a player that can sort of pick the ball up from the base of the ruck and just, or the base of the scrum, and just put his head down and get over the game line and make 20 or 30 metres. That's the sort of player that they've lacked. So I think that's a really good signing. Johnny Williams, I think, was pretty intriguing signing as well. He's obviously been pretty strong performer for London Irish and Newcastle prior to his testicular cancer diagnosis, which obviously he's recovered from. And I think he, you know, it's a matter of time before he plays for Wales. And obviously, Sam Costello as well, who's one for the future. And you know, I don't need to go into detail about how good a signing Liam Williams is. So on the whole, I think they've got a very, very strong squad, and I think they've strengthened the areas that they were weak in, primarily a lack of a ball carrying number eight. So yeah, I think they're best placed to do some damage this season.
We've always historically thought of the Scarlet strength as, you know, I guess being that that expansive brand of rugby that played for so many years. Is that still where you see the strengths, or are there other areas that you consider to be the areas that they're going to win games?
Well, that's their DNA, isn't it? The Llanelli and the Scarlets have played that way for, not that I can remember, but, you know, for the best part of 100 years, they've always prided themselves on playing the 15-man rugby, throwing the ball around, taking risks. And, you know, Glenn Delaney's been pretty clear that they're going to continue in that vein. But I think what's better about this Scarlet squad is that they can mix it up front as well. Because in the past, they've had a bit of, you know, it's always been a case of if everything clicks for them, you know, they play fast and furious. And if everything clicks for them, then they can beat top teams. but they've always struggled against teams that come at them direct and stick it up the jumper. But they've got a good scrum. I think Samson Lee staying fit is going to be important. And, you know, he hasn't had much luck in that department since 2015, so fingers crossed there. But they've added some real carriers in their pack. I really like Tavita Ratuva, the Fijian lock. He's, you know, okay, his discipline isn't great, but he's one of those players, you know, he very rarely loses a collision. He makes serious yards. Cal Mahoney will be that type of player as well. And obviously having Blair Thompson fit, I'm hearing that he's tearing it up in training. I think that'll be like a new signing as well. So, I think what they've got now is that they can play. In the past, they've obviously played an exciting brand of rugby, but they haven't really had a plan B, if you get what I mean. Now that they can shove it up the jumper, they can compete with the better packs. And as I said, you know, obviously there are, you know, bigger packs again in England and France, but I think they'll be, you know, they are, if a Welsh team is going to win or compete for silverware this season, or I say this season, but next season, then it'll be the Scarlets for sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You mentioned there Samson Lee too, and I think that, you know, whatever he is now, 26, 27 years old, it's an interesting point in his development. And perhaps some of the coaching appointments are a reason to think that that could be a good shot in the arm for him. I think particularly with Franks coming in, that could well be, you know, an area where you could, again, you talk about almost like having new signings with Blade Thompson coming back. If you're able to get a fit Samson Lee scrummaging like he used to at the start of his career, or even kick on again, that could be like another new signing in itself.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, obviously, the problem with Samson hasn't been, you know, a lack of attitude or anything like that. It's purely down to injury, I think, isn't it? I mean, he came on the scene, you know, and he very quickly made his way to the Welsh squad. I mean, he was identified as a future international. I don't know if you remember, but in the 2012 Junior World Cup, he destroyed the New Zealand scrum. I think it was Wales's. I think it was New Zealand's first defeat in that competition. So he was sort of always earmarked for greater things, and he you know, he took over from Adam Jones quite quickly. And the start of his Wales career, he was excellent, but. You know, obviously he had that Achilles injury in the 2015 World Cup, and he never really fully recovered from it. So I think it's about keep staying fit. And if you look at Wales as tight end options, there are players who are far more mobile around the park, who offer more around the park. But in terms of scrummaging, you know, Wales are short of really strong scrummaging tight end. So if he can stay fit, and if he can get back to the sort of level of scrummaging he was at, you know, in the past, then, you know, he can still have an international career. So I think it is a big 12 to 18 months ahead for Samson if he wants to get back to what he was prior to his injuries.
And you mentioned those areas that have been tightened up, particularly in terms of ball carrying. Where do you see the Scarlets having any weaknesses?
Yeah, good question. I mean, it's the first time in a long time where I look at their squad and I'm thinking, you know, there's not that many weaknesses there. Mm. You know, in the past, they've always been super strong in certain areas. Like, if you go back to the Pivock area, always very strong at the breakdown when they had Tyburn, Cubby, etc. Mm. And obviously, they've always strong behind the scrum. They always have been. There's always been that, well, you know, is their front five quite good enough? But now you're thinking, that's one of the better front fives in the Pro 14, I think. I think maybe the big challenge is gelling under a new coaching team. There's some continuity there, because obviously it's not as if Delaney's coming in cold and he has to get to know his players. He knows the players inside out already. He would have been able to recruit his own men. Obviously, they got a new forwards coach in Richard Kelly, and as you said, you know, well documented that all ex-All Black Ben Franks has come in. So I suppose it's how they gel. And maybe if I was to pick one weakness, the biggest challenge they face is the fact that this is the biggest weakness in the Pro 14. You know, the Scarlets have an international, their starting team, you know, is star-studded, isn't it? You know, they've got international players all around the park, and they're punished for producing Welsh internationals because those players are going away with Wales. you know, there'll be a lot of internationals this season because, understandably, because obviously they want to make up for the lost income of, you know, games cancelled last year. So, you know, it's going to be how they cope during those international periods. But what they have got is, you know, they got Sam Lousy, Tevita Rituva, Callum Mahoney, Uzair Kassim. So they've got some really good non-Welsh qualified players, high caliber players who perhaps the other regions haven't got. So I think they should be okay, but their biggest challenge is, you know, coping without their senior internationals during international periods. And obviously, you know, sometimes you have injuries on top of that. So that's the biggest challenge for them, I think.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they are punished in terms of losing those players. But like you say, that the recruitment's been good. And I guess that's been aided by the fact that we do now have that that change in the wage structure that means that the Wales internationals will have the bulk of their wages paid by the union, which again frees the Scarlets up to do that better recruitment. And as you say there, you're pretty confident the players that they've brought in are going to be able to add another dimension and add the depth to that squad even when the internationals are being played, because there's going to be so much international rugby over the next 10 months or so.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm really looking forward, as you know, I said at the start of the podcast, it's a bit flat, isn't it, the return to play, because realistically no region is going to get to the playoffs. But it's going to be interesting to see Scarlets out in Toulon, well, if it does happen, in that Challenge Cup quarter final, because you'd expect the grounds to be quite hard at that time of year. So you know, they might have, you know, an outside chance of winning that game. And it'd be interesting to see how they go in the Champions Cup next season. Obviously we can't say for certain because of the coronavirus, but you know, they have a squad that in normal times you'd be looking at them and thinking, right, that they should be able to compete very hard to get out of their pool in Europe. So, you know, it'd be really nice to see a Welsh region like the Scarlets did a couple of years back, you know, compete in the latter stages of the Champions Cup. And looking at their squad, there's no reason why they can't have those sort of ambitions.
Okay, well, let's take a look at the opposition next week, which is Cardiff Blues. I guess it's been a bit of a quiet summer in terms of recruitment for the Blues. They've got a few players coming in to join them. How do you assess their signings over the summer?
I think the signings they have made, Reece Carey and Corey Hill, are elite level signings. Mm-hmm. They're top end international players. I think Corey Hill is a big signing for them because he's not just a very good player. I think he's a real leader as well. And that's maybe something that they've lacked in their front five over the past few seasons.
Yeah.
You know, he's athletic. He suits the way they play. He's got an edge to him physically. And I think Reece Carey is a dark horse for the Lions to her. I think his potential is massive, and he's only going to get better and better. And he's, you know, we spoke about what the Scarlets lacked, and he's what the Blues lack. You know, a really explosive ball carrier, a really physical player. So that's good. And, you know, obviously Luke Scully's one for the future. So I think especially the two Welsh internationals are big signings. But I just think you look at the Blues' starting team, it can do damage. You can beat the best teams, but they don't have the depth, for example, of the Scarlets have got. You know, we spoke about Rituva, Callum Mahoney, Sam Lousy, high caliber non-Welsh qualified players that'll be there throughout the season. I'm not convinced the Blues have got that. You know, when they lose Carey, Corey Hill, Navidi, Ellis Jenkins, if he gets fit to the Welsh squad, and then, you know, they'll all be gone to international rugby. You know, the depth isn't there. I think what's key for them, two key players, I think, the biggest player for me potentially has to be Sam Moore, because, you know, Nick Williams was,
you know, colossus, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, that's the correct word. Not just in size, but in terms of impact on the field. He was, you know, on and off the field. You know, he was everything for them. And, you know, having a number eight that can just get over the game line when your scrum is going backwards and make serious yardage is, you know, that can be the difference between winning and losing. So losing him is a big blow. And I think Sam Moore, I remember watching him for England 20s, and early in his career for Sale, and he looked the real deal. Obviously, injuries have held him back, and we don't know whether he'll be what he should have been. But I think they really need him to stay injury-free. And if he reaches his potential, then if he reaches his potential, he'll be away with Wales as well. But I think he's going to be a real key player for next season.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really interesting talent. And you're right, one who's been kind of earmarked from a young age. And again, is at that kind of crucial stage in his career. And I said this on last week's podcast, I feel like there's a lot of that pack who have had loads of potential, and they're now at that position where Cardiff will need them to kick on. So I'm thinking about the Seb Davises and the Rory Thorntons, who, you know, had success and international caps at a pretty young stage, and now at that phase where, I'm not saying they necessarily hit a hurdle or something, but they're going to want to kick on and step up to the next level. And I think Cardiff Blues will need them to do that.
And another player, sorry, I should have mentioned just now, another player who I think they need to keep fit is Dimitri Ahip. Because I'm a big fan of Dylan Lewis, but, you know, I don't think scrummaging is a strong point. I think he's getting better. But John Mulverhill told me last season, and I asked him at a press conference, and he said Dimitri Ahip's the best scrummaging tight end in the Pro 14.
Yeah.
Now, that's a big statement, but he is that level. And obviously, I don't know if you remember, but when he left the Ospreys, he allegedly signed a deal with...
He did in France, wasn't it?
Yeah. Apparently, a deal worth €600,000 a year to go to Montpellier. I think he failed a medical, so then he ended up going to Cardiff. But the fact he was offered that amount of money shows how good he is. But the problem he's had is injury. And if he stays fit, you know, he's key for them, because they really need a solid set piece if they're going to do anything, because they've got an excellent back row. You know, the likes of Ollie Robertson will be there all through the season. Shane Lewis Hughes, both of them are good prospects. But, you know, you just fear that they're going to be a bit too lightweight in the front five when their internationals are away, and that's probably going to prevent them making the playoffs, I think.
I think that's been the story the last few years, really, is that front five has lacked a bit of proper grunt. You're absolutely right. When you consider that Ahip has not been able to stay fit for a long enough period of time to have the same impact that he had at the Ospreys. You've had Carré, you know, he's a young prospect. He's been away for a season without Saracens and is now back. And in the second row, you know, I genuinely think they really benefited from when Philo Paolo turned up last year, just adding a bit of real, you know, nasty grunt work around the pitch. And that's the area that I still think they're going to need to do. And again, I think Hooker, perhaps they're a bit light in there. You know, Dacey's been a loyal servant for a long period of time. Then you've got the likes of Belcher and Myhill, who are, I think, Belcher's a good player. You know, Myhill has played Pro 14 rugby for a long time. But I just wonder whether they needed to recruit in that area as well as in the locks.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you 100%. And every season, they're always consistently linked to Ryan Elias and Elliot. I'm not sure what the truth of it is, but, you know, if I were John Mulverhill or the Cardiff Blues board, or, you know, their head of recruitment, I'd certainly be looking to sign one of those two. Because, as you said, Dacey's a good player, but, you know, he's injured quite a lot. And even with him there, they're short at Hooker. They're lacking quality in that area, aren't they? Let's not beat around the bush. Just a big Achilles heel for them, and they really needed to recruit then. Well, you know, I don't want to keep going back to the Scarlets. I think you're right. The point you're making about Philo Paolo, he adds a bit of. He's not. I'm not personally a big fan, but obviously I see what you're saying. He adds a real grunt to their pack, or, you know, at least a little bit of an edge, doesn't he? But, you know, you look at what the Scarlets have got, you know, that Tevita Atuva, who was actually man of the match when Scarlets beat Cardiff in January, you know, because he's just so physical. He's knocking them back all the time. Just somebody who's going to be there throughout the season and who can just get you over the gain line with ease. They haven't got that. You know, I know for a fact they were looking at a few South African locks from the Currie Cup, you know.
Yeah.
A bit of hit to miss. But, yeah, they really, really... Obviously, you can't blame them too much, because this virus has hit and they're fight like everybody else. You know, they're going. It would be a bit silly to recruit because obviously the like the other regions, the signings they announced were made before the virus. But yeah, they are short in the front five, and another player who I think needs to really show what he's about and show that he's worth all the plaudits he gets is Seb Davis. No doubt he's a talented player, but you know, you get all these people, you know, I know Nick Williams has said before in interviews, I think he's going to be a future British Lion, but he needs to show that for me, he hasn't justified the hype. I think he's somebody that needs to really kick on the next few seasons because, as I said, I don't think he's justifying the hype at the moment.
I think he's exactly that kind of player, and I've been a big fan of his. And I think you know you go back and listen to podcasts from 2 or 3 years ago, and I was definitely in that camp of you know praising the potential that he's got. But now at the age of 24, this is exactly what I'm saying. These are the times where he needs to kick on and become a top class international. If not international, a top class. Club lock forwards, and again we said last week I don't think that stint in the national side playing at eight, you know, I don't think that helped at all. It never looked natural there for me. I think you know, to be fair, I don't think Cardiff did it on that many occasions, but I just think it's about developing those. We know he's got the kind of the athletic ability and the ball handling and stuff like that. But I think it's about those nuts and bolts of second row play that he needs to start showing and putting in those big performances. You know, it's the ball carrying, the tackling, adding stuff at the breakdown. That's what Cardiff will need from him this season and you know, this season / next season, whatever we're calling it.
Absolutely. And another area I think that a bit light is outside half. You know, obviously Jared's fantastic prospect. Well, he's a fantastic player, but you know, I still think maybe he needs to. His game management isn't quite there. I think they really missed Gareth Anscombe last couple of seasons. Last season, you know, him in the same team as Jared took a lot of pressure off Jared. You know, but I have no doubt Jared's going to make it as a top international. I think it's a matter of when, not if. But I think you know, obviously. Behind him, there's struggling. And, you know, I mean, Jason Tuvey's a decent player, but he's getting on a bit. Luke Scully, obviously, you know, decent prospect. But I just think they're lacking a bit of 10 behind Jared. And I think that one player I think is one of the most underrated players in Wales, if not the Pro 14, is Ray Lilo. I think he's a really, really good player. I think he's the glue that holds the team together. And another guy who's going to be interesting as well is Willis Halaholo. You know, because Wales lack depth in midfield, don't they? And especially outside centre, and I think he'll get capped.
I think he would have. I can't remember if that Barbarians game last year was a capped game or not, but he was in the squad and picked up a season-ending injury, didn't he? So I think it's pretty clear that he's going to feature, providing he's able to steer clear of injury, because he's got the ability, and it's something very different from what Wales have in the centres. You know, I think you've got, you know, in John Fox, you've got kind of the all-round centre, but he's very much built on power and great defensive ability. And then, you know, you've got some other options. Losing Hadley Parks means that you don't necessarily have that ball carrying / he was a footballing option as well. Just like, you know, I guess a bit of a level head in the centre. But there perhaps hasn't been that real jack in the box, can make something out of nothing, sidestepping player. And obviously, Halaholo brings all that. And that's a threat that I think Pivak will want to see in his training squads, if not in his match day 23.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's almost, as long as he's fit, it's almost certain he's going to get capped. I agree. You know, Halaholo offers something different to the other centres in the squad. He's got brilliant feet. You know, he's got really explosive power as well. And he'd be a lot of fun. But the only problem with the Halaholo, he can sort of drift in and out of games. You know what I mean? You know, he's a very destructive tackler, but Jonathan Davis is absolutely unrivaled in world rugby in how he manages, you know, the blitz defence, how he reads attacking players and shuts them down. Because I remember Sean Edwards saying a few years back that you can be the best defender on the park and not have to make one tackle. And Halehola does tend to sort of jump out of the line and miss time tackles. And, if you know, they say the 13 is the toughest position on the field to defend in. So that's his challenge. Well, I think he'd definitely get capped. But in terms of the Cardiff Blues, I think their strongest team is good enough to beat most teams in Europe. But obviously, they're lacking the depth, I think, to really sort of challenge to make the playoffs. I think they'll fall short, if I'm being honest.
All right, let's just finish the first half of this show by asking you for a prediction then. Scarlets versus Cardiff Blues. What do you think will happen?
Well, it's very difficult, isn't it, to know what's going to happen because we haven't got anything to go on. Again, you know, I think it'd be pretty tight. You know, obviously outside the international window, so, you know, they'll have as strong a team as possible. But I'll go Scarlets because they're home, but it could go either way. I don't suppose home advantage counts at all because there's no fans and it's only down
doesn't
the road.
Doesn't feel like it, yeah.
I'll go Scarlets, but I don't know. Could go either way. Very difficult one to call that.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a narrow Scarlets victory as well. But I think it could be, a close fight. I get the feeling that, like you say, there could be a lot of errors. And with the way that both these sides like to play rugby, you can see those back lines exploiting that. And I think it could be a very exciting game of rugby, actually. And I hope I'm not proved wrong when we come back to talk about it next week. But we're going to be looking ahead to the other fixture and previewing that, as well as doing the team-by-team analysis of the Ospreys and Dragons. And that will be coming up in the second half of the show. But first, we have this very, very quick break. Right, time now, Steph, to turn our attention to the other two teams in action next week. So the Ospreys take on the Dragons on Sunday. It's been a while since we've had a Sunday Pro 14 fixture, but they are back. And let's start with the Ospreys as they're the home team. I mean, it's been nothing short of an appalling season for them. However, a hell of a lot has changed in the time that that lockdown has taken over. There's a change in coach, change in ownership, and a change in a lot of the playing and coaching staff. So, do you think there's reasons for the Ospreys to be a bit more optimistic going into these games?
Yeah, I think so. You know, they've last season was, well, it's still the same season, but last season then was a disaster. I don't think there's any other word we can use for it, really. It was anarchy on and off the field, wasn't it? You know, I was at the Liberty Stadium when they lost to a pretty poor Southern Kings team, and that's probably the low point in the history of the Ospreys, I'd say. They were absolutely rudderless, you know, on and off the field, really. I was quite critical of them in some of the things I wrote. You know, I don't think that they've been run properly, if I'm being honest. I think the recruitment was awful. You know, they've still got a very unbalanced squad, in my opinion. And I think Alan Clark was thrown under the bus because I don't think he was able to do what he wanted to do, really. But I think Mike Rudder coming in has changed a lot of things. I think Rudder, you know, I think probably his coaching days are behind him. But yeah. I think in the role he's currently in, I think it's a very, very strong appointment, very, very positive appointment, because I think he's a guy that knows rugby inside out. He knows the market inside out in terms of signing players. He's a man that's big on culture, and he's not going to take any rubbish off the field. You know, he's going to put people in their places. If he thinks somebody's not pulling their weight, he's going to act on it. And I don't think that was the case in the past. So I think Ruddock is the biggest appointment they could have made. And I think Toby Booth is jury's out, obviously, but I think that's a positive appointment. Mm. I think he's a bit like Dean Ryan. You know, he's what they need at this particular moment in time.
It's no nonsense, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and that's what they need. They need somebody to come in and get it working again. You know, it's not about winning silver at the moment. They're way off that. It's about getting respect back into their brand, back into their the team, really. You know, and obviously on-field results. And, you know, things can't get any worse for them on the field. So you'd expect them to be a lot better to end this season and looking ahead to next season. You know, Brock. I think Brock James is an intriguing appointment, isn't it? You know, James Hook as well. So there's been a shake-up in the coaching team, you know, some fresh ideas. I think in terms of the signings they've made, I like Matt Prothrow. I've been impressed with him for Bristol. And, yeah, it's nice to see him come back to Wales and, you know, might even play for Wales in the future. So,
Where do you see him fitting in, Steph? This is an interesting one because, you know, I've seen him playing a few different positions for Bristol. I get the feeling that Ospreys are looking at him more as a full-back option than anywhere else. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, I covered Bristol a lot last season. He's a very talented player, great feet, brilliant finisher. He's a very intelligent footballer because he played age grade at 10. So he's standard first receiver a lot. There are some question marks over his defence. He's not weak in defence, but he's perhaps not as strong as some other players, but he's a sort of player that always takes the right options. You know, he's a great finisher, as I said. You know, he's got pace. He's got a really, really good kicking game. Can, you know, his goal kick as well. I'd say wing. And I think you'll see him standing at first receiver a lot because obviously you've got Brock James and James Hook, two very innovative tens when they played. So you would have thought that you'd see a bit more of an expansive game. So I think, you know, he'll be on the wing because they'd want to hide some of his defensive deficiencies, maybe. Not that he's weak in defence, but he's not as strong as others. And I think they'll, on second phase, I think you'll see him pop up at first receiver a lot. And, you know, because he's got a lot of vision. So I think wing with the option of playing infield during the game.
Yeah, it's interesting because outside half is an area of weakness for them. Obviously, Gareth Anscombe injury doesn't show any sign of relenting and there being a comeback anytime soon. And Luke Price certainly struggled. You know, and Kai Evans is a prospect and featured more at 15 than he did at 10 throughout the course of the season. But they brought in Stephen Myler to add a huge amount of experience. It was 34, 35 years old. But it's still an area that's what part of me thought, you know, might we see Prothero cropping up at 10 in a few of these games? Just because, you know, how many games are you going to be able to get Stephen Myler playing, you know, at that age?
Yeah. I think Myler will probably do a decent job, to be honest. You know, he's a solid player. He's never been spectacular throughout his career, has he? You know, he's good kicking game, you know, good game management, very streetwise player. So I think he'll do okay for them. But yeah, they still need to recruit a 10, don't they? And the talk on the grapevine has been for, the well-informed grapevine for quite a while has been that, you know, they are looking in the Southern Hemisphere for a 10. It was reported in the rugby paper that they were looking at Mitchell Hunt from the Highlanders and Jackson Garden-Basher from the Hurricanes. Not sure what the truth of that is, if I'm being honest, but I think they definitely need to recruit in 10 because they get a couple of injuries of 10 and Prof will have to play there, won't he? Brock James or James Hook will have to come out to retirement. It'd be that desperate, wouldn't it? So, I think they are short at 10. There's no doubt about that. I think number 8 as well. They're pretty short in. Their pack isn't what it was. I mean, they've got some great players. You know, Tipperick is absolutely world-class. Arlen Wynn, absolutely world-class. You know, Adam Beard I like as well. So they got some... Their starting team is again, like Cardiff, it's pretty good, but the depth isn't there. I don't think, is it?
I think the depth in key positions isn't there. You look at the second row and there's a lot, you know, I think there's a fair amount of depth in there, you know, with Rhys Davies coming in and adding a bit more there. And like you say, you've got Beard and Alwyn Jones and, you know, Lloyd Ashley's done a good job from there over a long period of time. Hookers, they've got, you know, they've got a fantastic choice there. you know, even to a certain degree in the front row is not. But then you're right, when it comes to number eight, it's thin on the ground. Obviously, Dan Baker hadn't featured for them for a long time, but he's officially made his exit now as well. And you feel like, you know, you cast your mind back to 2017 and or earlier, and Baker was able to add that, you know, that ball carrying impetus, and was a real kind of old school number eight, if you like. And it does feel like that's kind of what they're missing out of that back row at the moment, and they're reliant on players, you know, like Cracknell or Morgan Morris, who's a good prospect, and they're reliant on those players to kind of do a job for them rather than having an out and out starting proven class eight at that level.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you said, some of the key positions are lacking depth in, and that's the worrying, you know, aspect. When everybody's fit, you know, Arlywyn Jones and Tipperick are, you know, arguably world 15 level players, but there's not the level of depth there that, you know, that's required, really. If, you know, obviously there's only two games left of this season, but if we look to next season, unless they recruit, they're not going to make the playoffs, are they? Because they're just not going to be able to cope with the players missing and in, you know, during the international period. And that's been the criticism I've had of the Ospreys in terms of their recruitment. I know, you know, it's very tough financial times, but I haven't really, you know, they've signed players and you've thought, why are they signing this player? Because they're already strong in that position, you know, when they're weak in other positions. Like, it seemed to have been a case of making like statement signings and then leaving yourself short elsewhere, when what they need is, obviously, you know, you want top players, but you need, the squad is just too unbalanced. They've got really good young players, you know, like Sir Keelan Giles, etc., and Kai Evans, and there are others coming through as well, like Dewi Lake. And they've got their first choice team players are very good, but the middle tier of players isn't good enough. And it hasn't been for a while, right? That's where they need to recruit. They don't necessarily need to go out there and sign Liam Williams like they were trying to do, or Gareth Anscombe. You know, leaving Sam Davies go was a shocking decision all round. They need that middle tier of player, and that's what Toby Booth and Mike Ruddock need to address. The second, you know, your second choice players, the players that are going to be there throughout the season, need to be better, like they were years ago. And they are Jason Spice, Marty Haller, Theo Tiatia. I know times have moved on financially, the market's different, but that is that tier of player where they need to focus their recruitment on. And unless they do that, they're not going to compete for silver.
But you have to be sure. You're right that the market's moved on, but you have to be shrewd. And
yeah,
that's the thing that I found a bit strange with the Ospreys, is I've not been entirely sure who is in charge of that recruitment. It didn't seem like it was Alan Clark, but potentially he should have been, you know, because I guess he was there as kind of the head honcho, almost doing a director of rugby and head coach role. That's the bit that I haven't quite understood, is who is making those signings. Now, I know that Mike Ruddock has said he's not a director of rugby there. It's more of a, you know, a holistic approach to the whole region and player pathway development and all of these kind of things. But I'm sure he must be having a, you know, given the positive impact he's had in various other aspects of the squad and the club, I'm sure he'd be able to offer some opinion on how to recruit and how to make a better quality side, because they're going to need to do that in order to be competitive and, like you say, certainly make a step up to competing for silverware.
Absolutely, and I'd expect the recruitment to improve tenfold now, because I think obviously they've got new owners. Remains to be seen what plans they've got, obviously. But yeah, as I said, Mike Ruddock's a great appointment, and Toby Booth, obviously, he's been a very shrewd operator at London Irish, Bath, and recently Harlequin. So I think he's obviously going to be aware of where they need to recruit. And I think Ruddock, as I said, he won't take any nonsense. And I think he knows where they need to strengthen. And I'd expect the Ospreys to get stronger over the next couple of seasons. But, you know, as I said, it's that middle tier of player that needs to be significantly improved for them to get better.
It is. And just to finish on the kind of, you know, the marketplace changing, I kind of feel like now and going forward, there is going to be the opportunity to do this, because you've got, obviously everyone has been impacted by COVID. You've had the salary cap scandal in England as well. And, you know, when you look at the state that the RFU are in and the cost saving measures they're going to have to imply, it does almost feel like for the shrewder clubs, there will be opportunities to strengthen your squad and bring in a better caliber of player for a lower wage than you would have before. And particularly if, you know, if the new owners are serious about investing into the playing squad, I think this is a good opportunity for the Ospreys to do it.
Well, that all depends, isn't it? I'm going to open a can of worms again. So obviously, you know, it's common sense, I suppose, that, you know, the finances of the four pro sides in Wales have always been quite
fragile. Yeah.
No doubt about that. Scarlets obviously did well when they posted a profit, but on the whole, it's been pretty grim for all of them, for, you know, on the whole. So, you know, given that they're not going to have crowds until next year, if not longer, it's not going to help, is it? And obviously, the talk is well, it's almost certain they'll be getting a loan from the Welsh Rugby Union.
Mm-hmm.
A £20 million loan. Obviously, we don't know how it'll be divided between four of them. So obviously, that's a big problem. The new owners of the Ospreys, hopefully they'll go into their own pockets or at least bring more sponsorship on board. And that'll improve their financial position. But, you know, obviously, I don't know what they've got planned. And we don't know that. So, you know, it's going to be very difficult for the regions. It's going to be a very turbulent 2 to 3 seasons in professional rugby in Wales. You know, I've spoken to a lot of people, and there's still talk of, you know, going to a North Wales, East Wales and West Wales regional setup. Obviously, if you mention that in a PRB meeting, it would go like a lead balloon, obviously. But there's still people within Welsh rugby who are pushing for that. So, you know, it's a precarious position, not from an Ospreys perspective, but for all of them.
Mm.
You know, there's always talk now of, well, can we afford four teams? You know, do we go down to three teams? That's always been discussed. You know, I mean, among like the rugby public and those sort of in the know. But now you're thinking, oh God, I mean, how are they going to afford four teams? You know, and even if they can, I mean, they're going to be pretty, you know, they're going to be skint, aren't they?
The thing that I think is different is that for the first time, you have English sides in that position, because, you know, beforehand they were all just happy to overspend. Well, not all, but the vast majority were happy to overspend. And, you know, when they had the big TV deal, it all went into signing players. And as a result, you end up with balance sheets that show massive losses on there. And that had been the status quo for a long period of time. Now you're in a situation where, because the future is so precarious, and you see the revenue stream of gate receipts getting pulled away from it, particularly in English rugby, what they're going to do about the new broadcast deal. You know, I know BT are back at the table now, but BT have generally lost their interest in sport. It's not the, you know, 7 years ago when they signed that, they were making statements of intent. We are going out and we are challenging Sky. We're in a very, very different scenario now. They aren't, you know, they're not out there spending megabucks for it. So if they do end up with a, you know, with BT or with Sky, it's not really going to be, I can't see it being an improved or even close to what the deal was right now. So that's where I think things have changed. So that, you know, the future has been precarious for the region since day one, to be perfectly honest. And that's where I think, you know, if you are a shrewd investor, you'd be looking at now and thinking, now is the time where actually I'd be able to make some inroads in terms of the not only the players, but just the general, the way that the English sides have been able to be much more competitive in Europe than any of the regions have. But whether or not that'll happen, you know, we'll see. But I certainly, you know, if you just bought the Ospreys, and look, I'm not a serial investor, but I would be worried if I bought it and thought, well, look, let's just try and keep costs down to a minimum. Because, you know, the it's too turbulent at times for that. I think they have to strengthen and go out there and prove, prove to their fans, prove to the Welsh public that they're gonna really move the region forward. So, you know, we'll see whether that happens or not.
Yeah. I mean, I take your point, but as I said, it's just going to be really turbulent. There's going to be a lot of twists and turns, over the next couple of seasons. And, you know, we just don't know how things are going to pan out. And then obviously you've got the Dragons situation. In my opinion, the sooner they get back into private investment, the sooner they get privately owned again, the better. Because at the moment it's just a big conflict of interest, isn't it? So, it's going to be turbulent times, but it'd be interesting times as well. But I am particularly worried about the future of all four professional teams in Wales. But time will tell.
It will. Well, let's move on and have a look at the Dragons now, the Ospreys opposition next week. As you say there, there's been no secret and no kind of no shortage of controversy around their recruitment over the summer. But they have recruited a number of high profile players, certainly by the Dragons standards, the likes of Jamie Roberts and Jonah Holmes and coming in, and then you've got Nick Tompkins in on a loan as well. A lot of talk seems to suggest that Will Rowlands might follow suit. Putting aside unless you want to take on the finance of it, but what have you made of the recruitment at the Dragons?
Yeah, putting aside the politics, it's been good. It's been the most positive recruitment I think they've had in the history, if I'm being honest. Since they signed Percy Montgomery, anyway. So, obviously, if we started Jamie Roberts, I think he's not as good as he was in his peak, but he's still a very good player, as he showed in Super Rugby for the Stormers. It's not out of the realms of possibility to play for Wales, mind, but my gut feeling is he probably won't. So he should be there throughout the season, and he's still a high calibre player, and he's very experienced, so he'd help the likes of an Iron Owen develop. So I think that's a really good signing. Nick Tompkins, almost pointless in a way, because let's be honest, he's top player, but you're hardly going to see him, and it's a 1-year loan deal. The cynic in me would think that because they're union owned, they've got nothing to lose. But I don't think you'll see much of him at Rodney Parade next season. He's a very good player, but yeah, I mean, they got nothing to lose because they're double IU own. But I don't think that's quite as good as signing as they're making out. I think if they got Will Rowlands, I think that'd be a really good signing, because I think he's, they've lost Corey Hill, which is a big blow, because he was such a big personality off the field as well and a leader. So I think they need to bulk their front five up. It was a weakness anyway, and he'll help there. I also think Greg Bateman, if that signing's announced, I don't see him playing for Wales, like some people have said, but I think he's a really good club player, can play across the front row, which is very rare. So I think that's a really solid signing as well. So, I think the Dragons are definitely headed in the right direction. Jonah Holmes, I think, is top signing as well. This is the first time, I can't even remember the last time, this is the first time for a very, very long time that I think the Dragons are, you can be optimistic about the chances.
Yeah, I think, just on the calibre of the players coming in, I can't remember a series of signings like it, to be honest. Not since the kind of the Newport days. When there was kind of a glut of international stars coming in, and to be honest, it's what's needed. And I think a lot of it comes down to the character. As much as Jamie Roberts will be doing a good job, I'm sure he'll put in some really solid, good performances. But it's as much what he's doing in that dressing room that I think is going to really help. You know, when you have a player like that who's kind of consummate professional, really, I think that's just going to help the overall side, and that's what's needed in there. And again, much like we're saying about some of the some of the Cardiff players, that's what's needed with some of the Dragons players now. And we said this when we were chatting to Ashton Hewitt the other week. You know, you need players like Ashton now. He's not a, you know, he's not a youngster anymore, although he's young. You know, he's only 24, 25 years old. He's got so much experience that you need those level of players who were always seen as good prospects to kick on and be the heartbeat of the team now alongside some of those more experienced signings. And I think having the likes of Roberts in that will mean that, I think just like the hunger in training and stuff like that, that he'll be able to show will be of benefit to not just the centres, but the dressing room as a whole.
Yeah, I absolutely agree 100%. But one player I'm really keen to see kick on and stay injury free, because he'd be an asset not just for the Dragons but for Wales, is Ollie Griffiths. I mean, he's the best player I've ever seen play for Wales in the 20s. I'm including Jonathan Davis and Warburton and all them. He's the best I've seen at age grade level. I think when I've seen him play for the Dragons, when he's stayed fit, he's just been, you know, he's been outstanding, and he's got the potential to be one of the best back rowers in Wales. So if not the UK, so. I think he deserves a bit of luck, so I'm keen to see him stay fit. You got a lot of players, like you said, like Ashton Hewitt. You've got Harrison Keddie. You know, he's a player with potential. Tane Basham's got huge potential as well. And now you're in Owen, the centre's a bit younger, but again, he's one with massive potential. So they got some of the better young players in Wales. If you think about it, so. I'm more optimistic about the Dragons on the field than I've ever been, really. But obviously, there's a big cloud hanging over them as well, because you can't really talk about them without talking about the politics. And there's a lot of there's a lot of bad feeling at in Welsh rugby among the fans and among other regions, really, towards them, because obviously they're owned by the WIU, and even though they've got the smallest playing budget still, I mean, it's the whole cost of running the Dragons. And obviously there's this whole thing where they allegedly was a stop on signing players during the coronavirus, and they've been accused, I don't know whether it's true or not, but they've been accused of signing players when there was an embargo. So there's all this sort of thing hanging over the Dragons as well at the moment. So, and in my opinion, it is a big conflict of interest. I don't think you can have one union-run team and then three privately owned teams. It's a conflict of interest. So I think that the sooner, I know that apparently they're close to it, so the sooner that David Buttress gets them back into private ownership, the better, and then we can move forward and we can stop being jealous of them, basically. So, yeah, I think that needs to happen pretty soon, because there's a lot of questions to be asked at the moment.
Yeah, and look, I think that's probably the feeling from within the club as well. You know, it's certainly the noises that David Buttress makes, is that the desire has been for a long time to be privately owned again. And I think having one owned by the union doesn't make sense. And it was as a result of the fact that they're in such a dire situation that it was that or fold aside. But now is the position in terms of on the pitch that justification of keeping the side going has to be proved. And I think with this squad and with the improvements that they've made under Dean Ryan, I think that setup is there a lot more than it has been for a very long time. And I think this is the thing. And again, this is perhaps where Ospreys can be more optimistic as well. I think just the experience that Dean Ryan has brought has made such a difference. You know, you've not got a coach there trying to kind of carve his name out and cut his teeth as a coach, which is a really hard thing to do anywhere, yet alone at a region that's got a paper thin squad as the Dragons did for a very long time. And I think that's definitely helped, and I think Toby Booth will have a similar impact alongside the likes of Brock James at the Ospreys. It's just having that experience of knowing the simple things you can do when you go into a dressing room and say, right, here's how we can tighten things up, and make ourselves more competitive. And I think, you know, Ryan's been able to do that, and I think Booth will be able to do the same.
Yeah, and I think as well, I mean, we've spoken about, you know, new signings, and we had a chat about, obviously, Franks with the Scarlets and the Ospreys coaching team, but Dragons have made some changes in the backroom team as well, haven't they? You know, they've got Gordon Ross come in, former Scotland 10. Be interesting to see how he goes. Luke Narraway is there now full time. So, you know, things have changed in the backroom team as well. So, be interesting to see if there's any difference in the way they play. You know, Dean Ryan's second season. Well, obviously, the same season.
When we get round to it, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be the second season. So, he's, you know, he knows the players inside out. He, he's had a chance to recruit his backroom team and players. So, I think, again, politics aside, that, you know, I think, you know, I don't think the Dragons are good enough to win silverware. They're still way off that. But I think they can compete to be in the Champions Cup. I know they're in it next year, but, you know,
it's an again, anomaly, really, yeah.
Stay there, and it'd be interesting to see what plans the new owners have, when, because apparently it's imminent that they're gonna go you know, down the private ownership route. So it'd be interesting to see how much money would come in from that point of view as well. So yeah, it's going to be interesting times, and it'd be pretty turbulent as well, I think. So.
Well, yeah, let's finish just quickly by getting a prediction for you on that one. Again, limited, because we've not seen any of these sides for 5 months, but how do you see that one panning out?
Again, very difficult. I suspect it'll be tight, but I'm going to go for a Dragons win.
I'm going to do exactly the same as well. So there we go. We're aligned in that regard. But look, Steph, it's been fantastic to chat to you. And yeah, although it's weird, it is good to have rugby back in Wales next week, and we'll look forward to dissecting that with you all very, very soon. But yeah, Steph, thanks for joining, and thank you for listening. We'll be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon. Thanks.
Awesome.
Podcast Network.